We're back, Smooches, and we're kicking off spooky season with an in-depth analysis of the movie Don't Worry, Darling. We go to some dark corners of the internet to learn about cultural themes we spotted in the movie, including alpha males and trad wives. We discuss the successes and failures of the movie in getting its message across and conclude that the movie isn't as bad as the media hoopla made it out to be, but it definitely isn't as clever as it thinks it is. Spoilers ahead.
Hi, Meg.
Hi, Liz.
So we saw Don't Worry, Darling on opening weekend.
We did.
And we've had some time to process it.
I guess I did know it was the opening weekend, but that sounds like we were like champing at the bit to go. I don't know if that was the case, at least for me.
I was very interested in seeing how it all turned out.
Yeah.
But I wasn't so excited about the movie itself.
Yeah. I was really obsessed with the media coverage, obviously. And it wasn't until I was like sitting in the dark movie theater waiting for it to start that I was like, wait, am I going to be scared? Is this a scary movie?
Yeah, I wondered if it would be scary, but it didn't. It seemed like they put all the scares in the trailer.
Yeah, ultimately, I didn't find it to be a scary movie, even though it was like in the thriller category.
So if you are somehow not aware of the drama surrounding this movie, we talked about it in our last episode, or second to last episode, maybe, before we took a two-week break. So we'll link that in the show notes. We'll also link other YouTube videos breaking it down.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot, but the too long didn't listen is there were rumors of tension between lead actress Florence Pugh and director Olivia Wilde, specifically over Olivia Wilde neglecting her duties in pursuit of her possibly affair with Harry Styles, because there are questions of whether there was an overlap before she left Jason Sudeikis. So,
and I've also heard her described as like only a few degrees removed from Jason Sudeikis.
I've also heard that, but haven't been able to confirm what their relationship is.
Yeah.
Like if they're friends, and if so, through
who? Through who? Yeah.
So, okay. Now that you are mostly caught up on the fact that this movie had a very dramatic lead up, if you want to do deeper research, I cannot go down that rabbit hole anymore. But this movie was directed by Olivia Wilde. It starred Florence Pugh, Harry Styles, Chris Pine, Gemma Chan, Nick Kroll, randomly.
Yeah.
Olivia Wilde, and Kiki Layne, who says she had most of her scenes cut.
And is Kiki Layne Margaret?
Yes.
Okay. Is she known from anything else?
I don't know.
She was very strikingly beautiful.
I'm pulling up her IMDb page. She was in If Beale Street Could Talk.
Okay.
So she's got some serious acting cred.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a lot of her scenes were cut, which we'll get into how that might have impacted the film. And also the fact that she is the only prominent Black character in the movie. So her having her scenes cut kind of leans into the white feminism arguments that people are making about the movie. So Florence Pugh plays Alice and Harry Styles is Jack. They're a married couple. They live in an idyllic California desert development called Victory in the 1950s. The Victory Project is run by Pines Frank, who is a godlike figure in the community. Olivia Wilde specifically said that Frank was inspired by Jordan Peterson. And in my research, I was trying to figure out what Jordan Peterson is all about, because I'd heard the name, but had never, you know, wanted to listen to his ideology to find out why he was an asshole. The way that my husband, Eric, described him is He gives seemingly good life advice, but it devolves into dog whistles, justifying a shitty alpha male mentality. It's a lot of the man does this and the woman does that. And when you watch him, you know his logic is somehow unsound, but mostly you just know he's an asshole.
I don't know if you saw the story that came out yesterday where he was reacting to Olivia Wilde saying she based the character, the villain, on him.
How did he react?
Well, he cried, which is like the textbook definition of fragile masculinity.
That is so funny. I tried to listen to, so I'll link a couple of videos about him that are not in support of him, that are more breaking down his philosophy and his logical fallacies.
Mm-hmm.
And his,
I think he's like the incel prophet.
Yeah.
I mean,
he says things that are motivational on a surface level, like pull yourself up from your bootstraps, like motivational office poster kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
but then uses it to devolve into very right wing alpha male ideas. It sounds like I could not stand to listen to him for more than a few minutes.
The quote under this headline on one of the articles about his emotional reaction is, people have been after me for a long time because I've been speaking to disaffected young men.
Mm.
The controversial conservative said of the revealed Chris Pine character Genesis.
Mm. Well,
poor you.
So that seems like a point in Olivia Wilde's favor that she made him cry.
And she needs the points.
Yes, she does.
We'll get into.
I do plan on going back and watching her interviews on, I think she was on Colbert and a few other places,
okay.
Which I think were her strategy of trying to change the narrative of this movie's lead up.
Okay.
To salvage her career. So I've got to watch those and see what she said. So every day, the men in the Victory Project, they go and work on developing progressive materials. And no one knows what the hell that means.
Yeah.
There are explosions and earthquakes that seem to happen pretty frequently, and mm-hmm. people are used to them. So I think that we're supposed to get that it's maybe like Manhattan Project-esque.
Yeah, that they're developing some mass weapons.
Yeah. But the women, they don't really worry about it too much because they, first, they're strictly forbidden from going out into the desert toward headquarters. They have to stay in the town where it's safe.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend their days cleaning, cooking, sunbathing, taking ballet lessons, shopping, and they spend their nights hosting these lavish, debaucherous dinner parties.
Yes.
So all in all, it seems like a good time and everyone's pretty happy.
Yeah.
Except for Margaret. Margaret has been ostracized by the community and she's been written off as crazy after she broke the rules, went out into the desert
mm-hmm.
with her son, and then her son has been missing ever since. And she says that they took him away to punish her. She's been talking since then about how they shouldn't be there. She seems like she's in the middle of a psychotic break.
Okay. I didn't, that's something that I had forgotten, was that he was taken away to punish her.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. What she says. And the rest of the town refers to it as an accident.
Yeah.
But they're all just kind of not questioning what happened to her son out there. Like, she had her son when she went out in the desert and then he was gone. So
yeah, I don't get the impression that they're like accusing her of having killed him.
Yeah, I wondered if that was what they were implying, but there's definitely an implication from Bunny, Olivia Wilde's character, that it was irresponsible of her to take him out there, and therefore it made sense that something bad happened to him.
Okay.
So, which makes me very curious about the big reveal about Bunny later.
I have feelings about that.
Do you want to get into them now or when we get to the
We can get there. Yeah, we can get to the plot twist.
So Alice finds it more and more difficult to write off Margaret when she herself starts noticing odd things. She rides the trolley to the end of the line, which is her daily routine. And well, she usually rides it to go shopping with the other woman, but she doesn't hop off. She just feels like going further. And she
the trolley driver's like, I don't like this.
Yeah. So she rides it to the end of the line and sees a plane crashing in the distance. She is understandably alarmed, and she asks the driver to take her there so they can help, and he refuses because he's not allowed to. And she yells at him. She gets out, walks out in the desert alone in her little ballet flats.
Yeah.
And she doesn't find the plane, but does find a futuristic glass building.
Mm-hmm.
So when she presses her hands up against the building, she blacks out.
Mm-hmm.
Remind me if at this point we see her having some visions before she blacks out.
Okay. Yeah, like blood drops and like dancing, black and white, women. Maybe, I'm not sure if we get flashes of another time of her life at this point or not.
Unsure. I don't remember, but definitely I remember the black and white images and the blood. She wakes up in her own bed, and Jack is acting like nothing happened. He is very ineptly cooking dinner, which I think is supposed to be cute. Like, oh, look, he's trying so hard, and he's burning everything. And I was appalled. Of course, in my relationship, I would be the one bumbling and burning things.
You're Jack.
I'm Jack. And she starts noticing other strange things. So this isn't the end of it. Sometimes the eggs are empty.
Yeah.
There are only a handful of stories of how couples in the community met, as if there are only two or three plot lines as backstories. No one knows what the men actually do at work. She starts having these terrifying episodes. Like, she randomly, cheerfully wraps her head in saran wrap. Doesn't know why she did that. She feels the walls close in on her as she's cleaning, and she hallucinates in ballet class that her reflection is Margaret's before Margaret starts bashing her head into the mirror.
That was like the one time I felt like pretty scared.
Yeah. And then she lets out this ear piercing scream, and the other women stare at her because they're not seeing this, and she runs out. Things escalate further when she watches Margaret standing on her roof, and Margaret slits her own throat and falls. That was the other moment that really got me.
Yeah.
Because it was graphic.
Yeah, I couldn't watch. I can't watch. I can't watch skin being cut.
Margaret gets carted away by the men in the red jumpsuits. Alice gets dragged away by them as well. She's told Margaret's fine. She didn't slit her throat. She just had a fall.
She was cleaning the windows. It was all
an accident. She's in the hospital and she's fine. Margaret dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
He gone. Then Alice hosts a dinner party and invites Frank and his wife Shelley. So they're the big head honchos of this community, the founding family. And Frank, in a very creepy way that is less creepy and more sexy because it's Chris Pine.
Yeah. Weirdly.
Comes up behind her while she's cooking the meal and says that he knows she went out to Victory headquarters. And look at you, you're still here cooking dinner like a good girl.
And okay. I was like, if he looked more like Jordan Peterson than Chris Pine, it would have had a different vibe, I think.
And yeah, I don't know
the girl, I was like, can I record that?
Yeah, play that back. And I kind of feel like this was intentional. Because there was also that scene earlier where Jack is fingering her in Frank's room at the big like community gathering. And Alice sees Frank walk in and look at her lasciviously, and she keeps going, and it feels like she's turned on by it.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like if the movie was going to lean into some psychosexual thriller aspects, that it should have leaned into that dynamic.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, how might a woman be seduced by a terrible man? That's an interesting question because that happens every day.
Yeah. yeah.
So she so that
he lays the bait and she takes
she
it.
She takes it. Yeah. So at the party, she does what?
She sits back down. She is acting calm, mm-hmm. and then she's like, so how did you guys meet? And then as they're answering, she's like, oh, you dropped your handkerchief and he picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you go on honeymoon? And it's like she's outing the fact that there's only those like three plot lines that mm-hmm. you mentioned. And
Frank is watching her very intrigued.
Yeah. And she's like, eventually gets to the point where she's like, he is lying to us. Mm-hmm. Something is not right here.
He is doing something to us.
He's doing something to us. And he, of course, is very smoothly being like, oh, this is, she's unwell, blah, blah, blah. And then this was the part that really got me.
Mm-hmm.
His wife, Frank's wife, what is her name again?
Shelley.
Shelley's like, I won't sit here and listen to you badmouth my husband with all that he's done for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving.
Yes.
And then there's kind of a mass exodus of everyone.
Yeah. It's super awkward. So many questions about Shelley because superficially she is the woman upholding the patriarchy for her own benefit, like trying to buy into it.
Yes.
And therefore sacrificing some of her own freedom for some of the benefits.
Yeah.
But then at the end, we're not sure that's the case.
I have
huge plot hole.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts about the end too, obviously.
After the party debacle, Alice begs Jack to leave the Victory Project with her. Let's just pack our bags. Let's just drive wherever. We have to leave tonight.
And her whole thing is like, it doesn't matter where we are as long as we have each other.
Mm-hmm. And Jack, by the way, just got promoted in a very unsettling scene where it was like a wedding.
Uh-huh.
Almost. I saw someone describe it like he got this signet ring from Frank up on stage and it felt like a more permanent commitment to the Victory Project. And then he does a little dance.
Yeah. So the thing that made me feel like it was especially wedding like was when Frank slides the ring onto his finger. Mm-hmm. He doesn't just like give him the ring in the box.
Yeah.
And the dance was weird.
He was just hopping around in circles nonstop and like, why?
And everyone was like, wow, you're a great dancer.
And this is just a reminder, Harry Styles.
Yeah.
So I think that he probably has like more moves in his repertoire than just like jumping up and spinning. It was so strange and it went on for a long time.
And I don't know if it was meant to just like ratchet up the tension because you were shifting back and forth between the bathroom scene where Alice is talking to Bunny and mm-hmm. telling her like Margaret was right, like I'm freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
And then of course Bunny just gaslights the shit out of her.
I do think that the whole thing was meant to be unsettling and weird. Like, and why is this happening? It was. It succeeded.
There's a chant that they do. It's like, who owns the world or something like that. Do you remember?
Is it like, whose world is it? Our world.
Yeah. Whose world is it? I don't know. Yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm. So Jack agrees with Alice. Agrees to leave. He's
very tearful.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this is his special project. He doesn't mm-hmm. want to leave, but he loves his wife so much. It's bullshit. It's a ruse. Alice gets in the car and tells him to drive, and he doesn't. And the men in the red jumpsuit pulls her out. The men in the red jumpsuits pull her out mm-hmm. while she's screaming, crying, pleading with Jack not to do this. Harry Styles tries to give, you know, heart-wrenching emotion and remorse and ambivalence.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think his acting was bad in the movie.
No.
I thought it was fine. Okay. He was just a bland character. What are your thoughts?
I think that my impressions of his acting were really influenced by, like, the social media discourse around it. And the fact that I had seen, I don't know if it was on Twitter or what, where they were saying that his character is American and he is, they, you know, they showed that they leaked that clip where they're arguing and he's like, our life or whatever. Mm-hmm. And people were absolutely roasting the accent. And so I thought, okay, that's just more confirmation that he's not a good actor. Mm-hmm. However, his character is British.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh,
he was just talking like him. Yeah.
And I did feel, I was very conscious during that scene where he's like wailing, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And they're dragging Alice away, that this was a man trying to act. Mm-hmm. I didn't like forget and get lost in the character, but I also didn't think it was that bad. I mean, I thought I enjoyed it. So
the thing is, any scene that he is in with Florence Pugh, which is most of the scenes, you're looking at Florence.
Yeah, he's like a little piece of toast.
Yeah.
Just sitting next to her.
Yeah. So it really didn't take anything away because I wasn't paying attention to him.
Yeah. This was a Florence Pugh vehicle.
It was. Movie,
and I'm glad of it.
I thought that it was an Oscar-worthy performance on her part. When she gets taken away by the men in the red jumpsuits, she is given electroshock therapy. And that is when we start to see what's really happening. But she returns after treatment. Seems like she's all better. There's a banner welcoming her home. Mm-hmm. But then her real memories start flooding in. Mm-hmm. And this is when we find out that the Victory Project was just a simulation, a virtual reality simulation, and that it's not the 1950s, it's present day. Mm-hmm. Alice is a surgeon. Jack has lost his job. And he became radicalized on the internet by Frank's podcast. Jack clearly resents how much Alice works. And when she comes home from a long shift while he's been sitting around all day listening to Frank, he asks her what's for dinner. And mm-hmm. she is understandably like, are you fucking kidding me right now? And they've got this tiny apartment. They don't have hot water. Their relationship is not the sexy, fun, permanent honeymoon that it is in the simulation, though we do get glimpses of a time that they were happy.
Yes. We should mention that they have made Harry look unwashed. Mm-hmm. Sort of lank hair. And at this point in the real world is when he does the American accent.
Yes. We find out that in the simulation, which he volunteers for, and she does not, she is there against her will, he can create his whole backstory and he chooses to be British, which I thought was a pretty smart way to make him not have to change his accent.
Yeah.
Just be like, you can be whoever you want in this.
And it seems like a choice that he would make.
Yes.
Like, I think it would be cool. I would be cooler if I was
be more British. Sophisticated. Be like, especially since, if you think about the 1950s and the idealized masculinity, it's very like, it kind of makes sense that he would support the colonizers, you know, and be like, I want to be one of them.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a stretch or not.
Absolutely tracks. I should say too, that when he's listening to the podcast, in the real world, we don't see any of the other men in the real world, so we don't know like how different they look. Or
Frank could look like Jordan Peterson.
He could. His voice was still Chris Pine. Mm-hmm. And then I believe when we left the movie theater, your moral of the story was, this is what happens when you let men get podcast microphones.
Yeah, we need to put a ban on men buying microphones until we can figure out what's going on.
Love that. Also, after, like, immediately after I got out of the movie, a friend of mine texted me and asked how the movie was and asked if I had seen the twist coming, because he's apparently listened to a bunch of podcasts like breaking it down plot point by plot point. I did not see the plot twist coming.
I was spoiled by people who are smarter than I am, who speculated. I saw someone retweet or quote tweet someone being like, I bet what it is that it's not actually the 1950s. And the person was like, yeah, are people not clear on that? And it's like, I'm just a baby. I'm just a baby.
I also hadn't like tried to seek out information about the movie really, yeah, other than the drama. But yeah, I was shocked.
Yeah, I didn't know how they were going to make it be not actually the 1950s, but I thought that maybe it would be like not a simulation, but an actual community, and they were just brainwashed to be like in it, like right outside the walls. It was different, like the Truman Show. Mm-hmm. I thought it,
yeah.
Once I heard people speculating that that's what it was, I thought it would be like the Truman Show.
Right.
So after Jack volunteers for the Victory Project, he kidnaps his own wife. I loved how his mental health assessment was fair.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, why even put that in?
They go through like his participant application. They're like, mental health assessment, fair. Like, we don't want like complete like bonkers people in here, just bonkers enough to want to kidnap their wives.
As someone who is studying psychology,
mm-hmm.
It's both like funny and ridiculous, but also like sadly kind of realistic in the sense that like largely the field has been dominated by white men.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the like measures and evaluations kind of reflect that. So yeah, sure. They're like, yeah, this is wanting to do this to someone else. That's totally normal.
But I'm glad that he wasn't like in good mental health, because we could not have possibly believed that. That would have been a bridge too far.
True.
In the real world, while they frolic around in Victory, Alice's real body is strapped down in a bed, her eyes propped open Clockwork Orange style.
Mm-hmm.
How does she go to the bathroom? Who knows? Where is it the bathroom?
And these are the things I think about. There was also a point where he is shown squeezing like a wet washcloth into her mouth. And I was like,
yeah. So they're hooked up to IVs, which I didn't even notice. I just read afterwards that that's how they were getting nutrients.
Okay.
But like, you'd still need physical exercise so your muscles wouldn't completely atrophy. And
bed sores.
Bed sores, yeah. So it doesn't make sense. In Victory, Alice confronts Jack now that all her memories have come back, and he tells her that he did this for her because she worked so much and she was miserable. Mm-hmm. And he did this for them, and he's made the sacrifice of having to exit the simulation every day to go and work so that he can pay for the fee to be in Victory. Jack, why didn't you find a job before this?
Yeah.
Why were you unable to?
Yeah, I was wondering like, the same thing.
You clearly found a like decent job that you can pay rent and utilities and the fee when you were previously struggling under her sole income, and she's a whole ass surgeon.
Right.
I know you don't have food costs anymore, but
he acts like he's doing her this huge favor too. He's like, I fucking hate being out there in the real world.
The real world sucks.
I do it for you so you'll be here and happy. And he's like, you said it yourself that it doesn't matter where we are as long as we're together. And she's like, yeah, I was fucking brainwashed. Like, does it count?
And when he said that you work too much, he's like, I worked big that much.
She's like, I was a goddamn surgeon.
Yeah. I mean, I don't like working, and I still don't want to go into a 1950s simulation while my body decays.
Yeah, I'm like, if he could work this one job and then have enough to like support their two bodies and the entry into this project, couldn't he have like done that and allowed her to work less? Like,
yes. If that was your whole thing.
Yeah.
It does not make any sense.
They're having this out. Mm-hmm. And he's like, this is great because now you know we don't have to like pretend anymore. Mm-hmm. We can just be here and enjoy each other. And he like drops to his knees and he's like holding onto her waist, but he's like maybe holding too tightly.
He's trying to hug kill her?
And she's like, partially because she's freaking out, I think, and partially because of him trying to hug kill her, question mark. She's like, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. And so she grabs a highball glass and smacks him over the head with it.
And he dies like a bitch. Dies like a bitch. And then Bunny shows up.
Mm-hmm.
So now we can get into the shit with Bunny, because Bunny knows about the simulation. And she tells Alice that she needs to get the fuck out, because if Jack is dead in the simulation, he's dead in the real world. She chose to be in the simulation because in the real world, her children were dead. And in Victory, she's got them back. She's got fake children, because none of the children are real.
Right.
In the simulation, no little toddlers are hooked Clockwork Orange style into this virtual reality machine.
Which is like, I don't know, is that where the incels draw the line?
I guess. So, Bunny being judgmental about Margaret taking her kid out into the desert makes me think that she is projecting and that she blames herself for her children dying. And it was some tragic thing. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it had to be a tragic thing if they died at the ages that they are.
Yeah. And at the same time.
And it's also just, it makes me wonder if Margaret was in a similar situation, and but still, like, unknowingly was taken into the Victory Project.
Also lost her child or couldn't have a child.
So in that sense, like, Bunny could be like, what are you thinking? Like, giving up this opportunity to be the version of your kid.
Yeah. So did you have additional thoughts about Bunny?
Well, also, she confirms that the other women do not know that they're in a simulation, that she's the only woman who has chosen.
Yeah.
That
she knows of. Like, how could she actually confirm that?
Right, right. So, and that,
and that's me inserting that, not that she said, right, as far as I know.
That raises questions about Frank's wife for me too. But yeah, just it's supposed to be a movie. Olivia Wilde has been promoting the movie as a feminist movie and a movie centering women's pleasure, and the opportunity for the women to band together is a non-starter. And the only woman who is enlightened gaslights the other women and is complicit in their imprisonment.
Yeah. And then as Alice is escaping, it seems like the other women are also realizing something. Yeah. Like, whatever has been pinging in their brains is getting louder right now as this is all going down, and they're kind of resisting their husbands, but not to the extent of getting in the car and driving out into the desert, which is what Alice does, covered in Jack's blood. She runs over Nick Kroll, which was so funny. I like that part a lot. Every time a man died, I laughed.
Oh, okay. Here's the question I have. So yeah, at this point she's like, if you kill a man in this, he dies in real life, which I assume is just like brain death.
Yeah.
Is the same true for the women?
I think so. And she also made it sound like she needed to hurry up before like they caught up to her in the real world as well, because like they'll come get her. I was very curious about like what the safeguards were in the real world if the women were to wake up. And unfortunately, we did not get to see that in this version.
I was kind of hoping it wasn't the case for the women and that Margaret was free.
I think she's
she's gone. Donezo.
Yeah. She is pursued by a bunch of red jumpsuits, drives to the desert, climbs up the mountain. They're scaling the mountain like World War Z zombie style. She makes it to the headquarters building, and the movie ends with a black screen and Alice's gasp, suggesting she woke up in the real world. We also see Shelley kill Frank.
Yeah, right before she touches the walls at headquarters to bring herself out, I guess she hallucinates.
Yeah.
Jack being like, stay with me. And it's almost like she's like thinking about it weirdly. And then she sees the red jumpsuits coming and she's like, no, fuck it.
Yeah.
She touches the thing. And then we see Frank getting a call right after that. And they're like, she escaped. And he's like pissed or whatever.
The last thing we see is the black screen and her waking up. So it's before that. It's like her, like, she kills Collins, like, in the, she makes his car go flippity floop.
Which, love that.
Yeah.
Love that. And then his wife, Shelley, goes, she stabs him.
It's my turn now. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, you stupid, stupid man. It's my turn now. And then I have a lot of confusion.
Yeah. I have on the agenda talking about the lack of character development for the women of color characters in the film, so we can talk more about Shelley's weird ending and what the implications are.
Yeah.
So that is the recap of the movie, and we have a lot of thoughts. So first off, I wanted to talk about likely influences.
Mm-hmm.
What did you spot?
Well, you already mentioned the Truman Show, and I was thinking also of The Village,
Night
Shyamalan, Stepford Wives,
The
Matrix.
Yeah, The Matrix. I saw someone mention that, and that makes sense to me. I think The Stepford Wives was the biggest one for me. Stepford Wives was a book written by Ira Levin in 1972. It's been adapted for film several times, including in 2004 with Nicole Kidman in a campier adaptation. So I've actually read the book and seen both film adaptations, the 70s one and the 2004 one.
Mm-hmm.
And the common thread is a newcomer to this idyllic town notices how beautiful and submissive all the wives are. She starts to suspect that they're being brainwashed or there's some kind of toxin.
Mm-hmm.
That is causing them to change their behavior because they were all previously career women with jobs and interests. And it turns out that they have all been killed and replaced with robots. Like one of the men is a Disney engineer and everyone in the community is like
they're just like animatronics.
So in the 1970s version, it was like they were all killed and replaced by zombies. And by robots. And the Nicole Kidman one, it's like they're upgraded to cyborgs that are mind controlled. And it's very unclear of like, is this still their bodies or what? So it is a critique of male attitudes toward feminism, with the men wanting to return women to their proper place, played out to the extreme of them murdering their wives to have more submissive versions. I also visually got a lot of Black Swan from this movie.
Okay. It was very, visually pleasing to watch, like, bright and colorful.
Yeah.
In a way that I liked. I loved the costuming.
Yeah, it was really good costuming. The aesthetic was both retro, but like appealed to modern sensibilities. Like, oh, I would wear that.
Yeah.
So this kind of ties into the question I have of whether life was actually better in Victory and what that means, because I think it's like a directorial failure that it did seem like life was better. But I wanted to talk about the trad wife resurgence on social media. Are you familiar with the trad wife movement?
No. Okay. Like traditional?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Trad wife is short for traditional wife, and every few years, and it's coming back right now, there are lots of TikToks saying, you know, return to the 1950s.
Ew.
We see a trend of influencers espousing a return to traditional femininity and leaning into domestic caretaker roles while the husband is the head of household and sole breadwinner, which is a deeply impractical thing now.
Yeah. In this economy?
Yeah. So it's not. So even if like there weren't serious questions around that, it's not practical. The Wikipedia article on trad wives says, usage of the term has spread in part through social media accounts on YouTube and Instagram, featuring women extolling the virtues of staying at home, fixing meals, having many children and raising them, submitting to male leadership, and behaving like traditional wives. And the concept is controversial partly because of the associations in the United States and in Britain with the alt-right, white nationalism and the Republican Party. Basically, like, have a bunch of white babies and everyone knows their place, and the place that they're in always puts the white man on top. Ben Shapiro's sister has this YouTube channel. I think it's called Classically Abby, and it's all about, like, classic living, and it's repackaged trad wife ideology, because classic living is being, you know, a tastefully dressed conservative homemaker who fits traditional femininity,
right? Which has only been traditional for a certain type of person, which is, like, middle to upper class white person.
I think that the trad wife movement, some of the people who are talking about life having been better in the 1950s, while they are ignoring that it really was not, and that women couldn't have bank accounts, they did not have bodily autonomy, there was rampant domestic abuse, and the reason they got all that shit done and were so skinny is because they were on fucking amphetamines.
Yep.
And then barbiturates to sleep.
Uh-huh.
Please see Valley of the Dolls. But coming back to my question, was life in the movie actually better in Victory?
Well, are we putting aside the fact that, like, they didn't have free will? Like,
yeah, we're putting that aside. We're like, you're in Victory. You don't know that it's a simulation. So, are you happy?
Well, in the sense that they have all been manufactured with the same value system. So what they want is to have this, like, sort of American excess lifestyle. That said, I don't know that it was really 100% like better, because there was that knowledge, that undercurrent of, like, there is something going on, but we're just not gonna dive in there, because they self-policed into, like, not asking questions. They policed each other into not asking questions. They get on each other when someone starts to veer out of the lane a little bit. So there, I think there is that still, even if they don't know they're in a simulation, that knowledge that, like, this is good because it is limited.
Yeah, I think that those are all good points, and I agree with them. At the same time, I feel like...
You'd like to have a cocktail by the pool every day?
Yeah, and, you know, shop every day, not have to work to shop every day. There are aspects of that world that were... It was made to be more appealing than not appealing. Specifically, true, the unappealing aspects had to do with the rigidity of the social norms, and then finding out that they were robbed of free will. And, you know, if you have hobbies outside of shopping and riding the trolley and going to ballet class, that's not, Victory is not the place for you.
Yeah.
But the movie could have done a better job of showing a dark undercurrent of their actual lives. Like, that they weren't happy, they were unhappy, which, when we talk about the original script, I think it did more to show that. To show how men who would kidnap women, who weren't always women they had actual relationships with, into a simulation, would actually treat women, which was not by constantly going down on them. And that's my next agenda.
Okay, good. I'm glad. I'm ready to talk about it.
My question for you, Meg. Why was Olivia Wilde's emphasis on this being a movie centering female pleasure completely nonsensical?
Because it's all rape / assault.
Yeah.
And it's all completely lacking in consent.
Like, yeah.
You can't consent if you're drugged and put into a simulation and electroshocked anytime you question it.
And why would we never see Jack getting off when this is a society built for the men and male pleasure? Like, why did he never, you know, get his?
Yeah. Those two personality traits don't necessarily, like, overlap.
Yeah.
like someone who would kidnap a woman into a simulation and someone who really cares about women's pleasure.
Yeah.
Like, what?
I've seen speculation that it might be one of two things. One, he doesn't want to have to clean up the mess in the real world afterward.
Okay.
And two, like maybe he feels bad and this is the way that he makes it up to her by being like this perfect giving husband.
I'm just saying that a man who is going to put her in a simulation, mm-hmm. keep her body strapped down to a bed for, we don't have an idea of how long this has been going
on. Could have been years.
Could have been years. You're telling me he's not doing stuff to her body in the real world?
Damn, that got real dark for what's already a dark premise.
I'm just saying,
like, yeah, no, you're
this
right.
Happens to women in comas with some regularity.
Yeah, you're
and
completely
if he
right.
Has 100% access to her, she's an object that belongs to him.
Especially since he says that his life in the real world is such a drag because he has mm-hmm. to go to work every day, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, you could see him coming home and being like, well, I'm not going to get mine in Victory, mm-hmm. but I can get mine here.
Yep.
Oh, that is chilling.
Yeah.
The reaction from Harry stands has also made me think that the message of the movie did not come across effectively
People
for
are
everyone.
Into Jack?
Okay, so I have some samples of social media commentary. One girl on TikTok saw someone on Twitter say Jack died holding Alice's hand and IDK how I'm going to go about the rest of my day now. I'm going to let that one sink in before moving on to the next one.
Oh.
This one is another screenshot from TikTok with the comment, what movie did y'all watch? The TikTok screenshot says, the way he taught her how to drive in case she ever needed to leave.
These are possibly more disturbing than any of the content in the movie.
Yeah. And then finally, I have a text message exchange. This movie was actually so devastating because even though he did that, he loved her so much. The person responding, it is so sad. The original writer, like, so much. The respondent, I know he did. Like, he really did. The original writer, he didn't want to lose her. The respondent, he didn't do it out of spite or maliciously. Original writer, and yes, what he did was absolutely horrible. And then the respondent, he did it because he thought it would make her happy. And I don't have an image of this, but I do remember seeing on social media people reacting to someone to saying that in their screenings, Harry's fans were like, she's not gonna stay? She's gonna, why would she do that? Why would she leave him? Like, they genuinely thought, given the chance to be in a simulation against your will while your body decayed in the real world with Jack Chambers, who they see as Harry Styles, would be the way to go. That's what they would choose.
I find this extremely upsetting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It's like, how much of that is delusion and how much of that is that the movie didn't succeed in doing what it set out to do?
I guess that I am just hopeful that the people who are feeling this way are like very young and will grow out of these ideas. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can sort of compare it to my own teenage experience with Twilight, thinking like, wow, what a great fucking relationship that was, and it was totally toxic and abusive. But Jesus, that is so misguided.
Yeah.
And so dark. That is so much worse than anything that we're getting out of this, like, messaging of the movie.
That's a terrible takeaway, and it scares me that these young women are the same ones who are going to see the trad wife videos on TikTok and YouTube and internalize that that is what they should aspire to, and that they will also become prey to the type of men who listen to misogynist podcasters. So Just to hit that real quick, skipping ahead in the agenda, we're almost done. So if you're on TikTok, you see a lot of people, depending on the side of TikTok, you're either seeing these videos on your For You page or you're seeing the people who are roasting these people.
Okay.
So I see the people who are roasting these people.
All right.
There are lots of misogynistic podcasters who talk about being a high value man, and seeking women who have a low body count, seeking women who take care of themselves. So like thin, submissive women, why women should cook and clean for men, how that's a woman's role. There's so much of that. And it's like the devolution of the pickup artist mentality, where it's the pickup artist mentality, but how do you carry that throughout an entire relationship?
Oh my God.
Don't talk to your woman about your feelings because that makes you weak. Talk to your boys about your feelings. Don't let a woman ask you questions.
Is it gay to talk about your feelings?
Is it gay to talk about? Is it gay to wash your ass? The most recent, most damaging one recently has been Andrew Tate, who, from my understanding, is an actual human trafficker.
Oh, shit.
And he is a self-avowed misogynist, talks about owning women, and a lot of the response to criticism of him has been people asking, well, what color is your Bugatti? Like, saying that Andrew Tate is clearly doing something right because he is wealthy. He has been deplatformed off of social media, thankfully, and I've seen comments from educators saying that they were seeing the young boys in their classes talking about Andrew Tate and espousing that ideology and acting like him. So these people on social media have real life consequences. And it's not just women who are being misogynistic podcasters. It's not just men being misogynistic podcasters. It's also women. There's this girl, I think her account was just Pearly Things, and which in itself sounds like a parody. And she of those like just girly things memes on Tumblr. She seems particularly fixated on fat women.
Okay.
And has made multiple videos and podcasts about how men don't want to date fat women. Fat women don't want to date fat men. Look at Lizzo. Keep Lizzo's name out of your fucking mouth.
I'm looking at her Instagram. Yeah.
Nobody looks good at 300 pounds. And then when 300 pound and up women were stitching her video being like, bitch, I do. She was like, everyone who is using my sound is just proving my point. Okay. And it took someone pointing out that she was the same podcast lady for me to realize that it was the same person. Like, I did not realize that the girl saying no one looks good at 300 pounds sitting in her bed in a t-shirt was the same one who was the podcaster with the pearl necklace.
Okay.
Because I don't criticize women's appearance, but her face is so nondescript to me that I have face blindness around it. And that is not someone who should be talking about other people's appearances. And this is the one time that I will say like something critical about how a woman looks, because like she is like Anne Veal, no face. She's the one criticizing how women look and saying that men don't want a woman who has been with more than however many men because that devalues them.
I am so removed from this section of the internet that this is all very new to me and very, very upsetting.
Yes. I am sorry to bring this to you. I've been steeped in this because I've seen that bitch be stitched up and down TikTok for weeks. And apparently she's the ex-girlfriend of Angry Reactions, who's a very popular TikToker who's like very wholesome, and he reacts with his brand is aggressive positivity. So okay. He looks very mean and angry while he's saying, like, encouraging things to people who he's duetting.
It's called Angry Reactions.
Angry Reactions. They used to date, and people have been tagging him, asking him to comment, and he's like, please don't tag me in nonsense about my ex.
Oh, I've seen this guy. Yeah.
She wasn't like that when we were dating, and I don't agree with what she's saying, but also I shouldn't have to say that I don't agree with what she's saying.
And
he is also a fat man, so she is saying all this stuff about fat people.
When she dated and he's a black man.
Yeah.
And I feel like it cannot be ignored that this sort of like trad wife thing is certainly hand in hand with white supremacy.
Oh, this is such a dark thing that I've seen on the internet, but there are women who use the hashtag black bread to boast about the fact that they are white women having babies with black men, and it's like a trend and a movement, and it's very fetishizing of black men and gross and unsettling. And also, like, the idea of bread is very, of breeding is very dehumanizing and animalistic, right?
That's the kind of bread oh god. And which I cannot help but think about what the Kardashians have brought.
Yes, absolutely. And now they've all taken out their BBLs and they're dating white men. So
yeah, they just co-opt blackness when it was convenient, and now they're shedding it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus, so, God.
I will have links in the show notes about all sorts of terrible people. So all sorts of terrible male podcasters and thinkers. Joe Rogan. I have a deep dive episode of a podcast about him, because I think that he both is a terrible person and platforms a lot of terrible people and is very popular with a specific demographic. Andrew Tate, I have a podcast episode, and I will also link an episode of Salem Tovar's YouTube channel where she talks about Andrew Tate. It's very helpful to me to know what these people are about, but I clearly don't want to engage with their content.
Right. So you're going to be linking
not
pieces of media from other sources, analyzing them. Okay.
Yes, correct.
Good.
And also Jordan Peterson. There was a great clip of Justin Baldoni on his podcast about misogynist podcasters. He didn't name any of them, but... definitely who he's talking about. The other articles that I'll link are about the white feminism of the movie, why the sex scenes make no sense, how the movie fails to sell that the wives are oppressed, and unanswered plot hole questions. All of that will be in the show notes if you want to do an even further deep dive. But the last two things I have on my agenda, unless there are other things you want to hit on, are the lack of development of women of color in the movie and the changes from the original script.
Okay. So
where do you want to go first?
Let's stick with the movie for now.
Okay.
So talk about the lack of development for women of color.
Okay. So we had Kiki Layne's character Margaret, who says most of her scenes were cut. So let's talk about her.
There was very little from her. She was basically your first person who gets killed off in a scary movie. Like a plot device.
And in some ways she was almost like the monster of the movie for part of it. The looming threat, the thing that caused you to feel unsettled. It looks from her social media pictures that originally she was in the big celebration Jack's promotion scene, which in the movie took place after her throat slitting. So either they rearranged the order of those scenes, or they didn't kill Margaret off in an original version.
So it's not that Alice was seeing her as she was seeing her during ballet.
No, like she was in a red fancy dress and her husband was all dressed up. And I wonder, like, at that point, one thing that they could have done is they could have actually patched Margaret up and re-brainwashed her, put her back through the program. Mm. And she showed up at the party happy as ever, which would have been interesting to make Alice further believe she was losing her mind.
Yeah, true.
She could have been replaced with a fake Margaret, like the fake children.
True.
I think it would have been good to see more of Margaret before.
Right.
She started picking up on what was wrong in the simulation. And in general, I wanted to know what the other women were about.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of Victory.
Right. Yeah. She... Yeah, you just see her in a state of, like, there is no indication that she is a, like, thinking person.
Mm-hmm.
She's, like, unstable in all the scenes that we see her, and which is not very many. And then we watch her, we watch another Black woman's death.
Yeah. And I don't think that the movie did this intentionally, which is a problem, because there was an intentional, there is a version of this where all her white women friends turning on her is a social critique.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Olivia was thinking that deep.
Mm-mm. No.
I think that that character could have been written as a white woman and they slotted a Black actress into it and then did not take into account what a Black woman's unique experience would be in a place like Victory. And it makes Victory this post-racial utopia. Right. When 100%, like, men who would sign up for something like this, I don't think that Black people would be allowed, for one thing.
Yes.
I think that that maybe there'd be some tokenism exceptions, but I don't think that it would be a racial utopia. I think that there would definitely be racial undercurrents.
Yes.
In a place like this with people with these ideologies.
Yep. I 100% agree.
So then we have Gemma Chan's character.
Yes.
Tell me all your thoughts.
It's just like the whole time, the whole movie she spends being a version of that. What is it? Just Pearly Things?
Yeah.
She is another reinforcer of the culture of Victory until those last like 30 seconds when she stabs him, which she could have done at any point.
Yeah.
Really. And says, "You stupid, stupid man, it's my turn."
Which, what do you think that means?
I don't know. I'm like, I have no idea what that means. It could be sinister in the sense, like, it's my turn to run a simulation like this. My turn to subject people. My turn to take the position of power.
Which none of those things are good.
No.
And they don't speak well to her character or, like, and we don't know why she would want those things.
Yeah.
We know why Frank would want those things, because he wants a society where men are on top.
I think we were meant to be like, yeah, it's our turn now. But this, especially in light of how, like, complicit she was throughout the whole thing, which could have been an act of self-preservation.
Yeah.
But based on what we know, it seems like she would maybe espouse those same kinds of ideas of subjugation.
Yeah, like, I got Serena Joy from it, from The Handmaid's Tale.
I have to. Oh, yes.
But I don't know if we were meant to get that, because there's so many possibilities for, did she go in willingly as his first test subject?
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that she also believes is an ideal civilization? did she never believe in these things and she was brainwashed and it's just now coming to, or has she known the whole time and either changed her mind about Frank or like more, had more of an Alice situation and just played the role better so that she could take the opportunity to strike when Victory was weakened?
So if we give it the most positive interpretation that we can, how do you, how do you take what she means?
The most positive interpretation is that she is there against her will. She's figured out, she's been trying to figure out how to, how everything runs so that she can take the opportunity to get rid of him and then fix it. And it's her turn, like, to put her plans into motion. That is the most generous interpretation that I would have. How about you?
I don't even think I could think of like a really good one. So I was hoping you were going to supply one. And that makes sense to an extent.
But worst case scenario is she wants a victory where she gets to subjugate men, or worse, only certain women get to be in power.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about the racial components with Kiki Layne. I can't help but think about stereotypes of submissive Asian women and whether Frank targeted her to be his submissive Asian wife.
Yeah.
Lot of disturbing things to think about after this movie. And again, I don't think that the movie was poorly directed or poorly written, but there was so much more that could have been done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it spent too much time on the lavish ambiance of the 50s aesthetic.
I agree. I came in expecting it to be hot garbage. So when I watched it and it was not hot garbage, I was like, wow, this is shockingly good.
And but it could have been better.
After I spent some time thinking about the messaging is when I was like, well, maybe it is a little hot garbagey. So do you want to talk about the script?
I do. So what do you know about the original script?
This is just what I'm remembering from one article I read. I believe it was written by men.
By Dick Van Dyke's children?
Yes, that's right. His sons or grandsons. I can't remember. But then Olivia Wilde and her writer, whose name escapes me at this point, bought the rights to it and then did some sort of ham-fisted rewrites.
Trying to make it more empowering to women, but I think they did the opposite almost.
Yeah, whoops.
Yeah.
But do you want to talk about what the story, how the story differed in the original script?
Yeah, so I believe, and I'll post articles about this because there was a lot of emphasis on what the ending was originally as opposed to the entire original script. But I think that in the original script, women did not have it as good as in this one. There was more of like how women were actually treated in the 1950s, and I think that changing that was a mistake. I think that those things should have been included to show that this is not like an ideal society, like you would not want to stay if given the choice. It showed more of how more of the real world and how the husband character faked, because they had different names, faked his wife's disappearance. So you see more of the logistics of how he got her into Victory. And you find out that they were actually divorced at the time.
Right.
Kidnapped her. So you see the Alice character, originally called Evelyn, get out of the simulation much earlier and go back in and try to unravel the mysteries and figure out how to get back out. And there were other exit points, not just the one out in the desert. There was no Frank character. This Uprox article says that there was a Dr. Anderson, which feels like a Matrix reference.
Yeah, it does.
Neo's character, Mr. Anderson,
right,
is what the simulation robot calls him. I haven't seen The Matrix in a long time, guys. I'm sorry.
So, yeah, and the gaslighting is more complete in mm-hmm. that original script where she, the movie is like ending mm-hmm. with her being in a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
And seemingly hopeless.
Yeah.
Until Bunny, the character for Bunny, visits the character for Alice mm-hmm. and says, there's a portal like behind us.
Yeah.
And she gets the spark of life and starts moving toward it.
Mm-hmm. Which I think could have been a very interesting ending. So it seems that there was also, this is what people take issue with, which some people think this would have been a much better ending. And some people are like, we're glad that we didn't get that ending.
Mm-hmm.
In the original ending, Evelyn/Alice stabs Clifford/Jack mm-hmm. first with a kitchen knife, then with a screwdriver to the eye. And I think that there is a, oh yeah, she even threatens to sodomize him with a broom handle. That particular thing I'm glad was taken out, but I wouldn't have minded a screwdriver in his eye.
No.
It's what he deserved.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That, I don't like the sodomizing threats. Like,
yeah.
That's really weird.
And I will say that when I heard that the original ending had a revenge rape, I assume that it was Alice being victimized.
Yeah.
So it is, I originally thought that the ending was a lot, was more violence against women, but yeah. It was violence against Jack, which, like, again, I'm all for him getting stabbed because it's what he deserves, but I don't want to see anyone be raped.
Yeah. No, we don't. I don't need that.
Are you sewing?
Yeah.
What are you sewing?
It's part of my Halloween costume.
Oh, very nice. How 1950s of you. Okay. This was a movie.
This
the
has
thing
been...
about the movie, it feels like a movie, in the words of Harry Styles.
Amazing.
not a incredible or expected follow-up to Booksmart.
No.
Not as bad as people speculated it was going to be.
Right.
Not as smart as it thinks it is.
That was very well put. I agree with all those statements.
We will have enough links in the show notes for you to become a veritable scholar on Don't Worry, Darling, and its social themes and ham-fisted attempts at conveying them. And we'll also have links to all our social media and to pre-order my book, which, thank you for listening to this episode. Let us know what you thought of Don't Worry, Darling. Let us know how you would have written this film, and maybe if you were to reboot this, who you would cast instead. I'd keep Florence. I don't know about some of the other casts.
So until next time,
air kisses.